This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. Episode 28.
Dun, dun, dun.
I didn't even say like hello or let's begin. Apparently it's going to be a dramatic one based on the way you started it.
Very dramatic.
Very dramatic. And we're going to, I have no idea what we're going to talk about, which is intentional.
Yes.
It's intentional. So yeah. We're going to just talk, which is, I guess, what a podcast always is, but we're going to talk about something that you are prepared to discuss that I have the smallest of ideas about.
Correct.
And I'm going to just...
And you're just going to...
Rip you apart.
Probably.
Go ahead.
So we've had a couple requests to talk about hop in non-work environments. People apparently like talking about non-work stuff every once in a while. And so I had a
first question.
Yes.
This has to be somewhat weird for you, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because when I started this 2 years ago, it was definitely outside of safety, but maybe not.
I mean, sort of not really out. Yeah, it's very safety centered for sure.
So now we're outside of work, which has got to be weird for you.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Next, keep going.
Okay. So I am currently navigating a situation that I'm using lots of hop thought processes for. And I don't know if I'm navigating it well, but I thought I would try to open up the doors to how I'm processing things so we could kind of talk about a hop lens on something completely unrelated to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have something going on in your personal life.
Yeah.
And because you say this all the time, eat, sleep, drink, breathe, think,
yeah, hop. Yeah.
You were going to kind of share what it's like to apply that outside of any work that we do and just a normal sort of personal dilemma.
Correct.
In a way.
Yeah. And then people can tell us if this is helpful to them or if they prefer us to kind of stick in the non personal stuff space.
Yeah. Don't talk about us. We're not important. But I think we had a training yesterday.
Yeah.
It's hard for some people and it's hard for me to take some of the points that we make that are very focused on something and then apply it to something totally different.
Correct.
So this is just an example of how what we talk about actually, if we're using a specific story, it's just concepts that apply everywhere else, and this is the everywhere else.
Correct.
So
this is that. Okay. And so this is, I'll set you up with just a scene, right? So picture this. This is a real life scenario of me walking into my daughter's daycare, Penelope's daycare.
How old is your daughter?
She is 4.
Okay.
Okay. So we got a mental picture. So 4-year-old daycare, and seeing one of the teachers sort of just very angrily correcting some of the other kids in sort of like a move over here. I told you to sit down, kind of like in that tone of voice. Which a little bit of like a, as a mom, like a red flag of, you know, why are we yelling at, you know, 2, 3, and 4-year-olds? It's probably not the way that I would personally want to handle a situation. So that happened one day.
Is it bad that when you said that, I was like, yeah, well, you got to tell those kids what to do. They're not going to listen to you if you do nice.
Right. So, I mean, it depends upon parenting style, right? So my visceral feeling walking into that was, oh, I don't really like how they're talking to this child. Like, that doesn't make me feel comfortable. And I thought about all of the different ranges of ways that you can respond to that, right? So I could picture walking in, seeing that, feeling viscerally the way I did, and then taking that energy and walking directly into the director's office and being like, hey, so-and-so teacher, I just watched them yell at this kid. This is not acceptable. I don't want this. You need to go do something about it. Right? I could picture that as being a response. it didn't feel like the right response, right? Because I don't have enough information. All I saw was one snippet of an interaction. And although it made me feel horrible, and honestly, my first thought was like, I kind of wanted to take Penelope and just like leave, right? Immediately. I didn't. And I realized that I didn't have enough information to make that judgment.
And just to be clear.
Yes.
Was this teacher speaking to Penelope?
No.
Okay.
Speaking to a different student. Yeah. So then I said, okay, I need to operationally learn, right? I need to understand what normal looks like, which is really hard as a parent. I'm sure any parents here that have their kids in, you know, some sort of either preschool or daycare or, you know, outside of the home all the time can probably empathize that you don't really know what's happening. You wish you knew what was happening all the time, but you don't. And depending upon the age of your child, right, they're either really good at narrating what's happening or they're not. And also they don't have a ton of life experience. So what might feel normal to them, you wouldn't want to be their normal. It could feel normal to them, but you might
which
not.
Which is why when you said this, that I spoke to these kids, I was like,
that makes sense to me.
I spoke to, so I guess that makes sense.
So now I'm trying to figure out what normal looks like. And so I'm asking a bunch of questions, and some of the questions I ask of Penelope of like, you know, like what teachers do you really like, getting a sense of whether or not she has any fear from any of these teachers. But then the other things that I really wanted to understand was directly from the teachers themselves, which, you know, we talk about operational learning. And if you picture this as like, teach me what it takes to get your job done, that's not really a conversation that as a parent, I can walk into a busy daycare and grab a teacher and pull them off into the corner of a room and just start operationally learning with them in like a, hey, let's start from the beginning of your day. Like, how do you like teach me what it takes to get your work done?
So instead, walked into the director's office and you played them all 27 episodes of our podcast. And you said, listen, I need 3 to 5 teachers or teacher's aides. And we're going to spend 2 sessions over 2 days.
Exactly. In this office to talk through. No. So I couldn't do that, but that doesn't mean you can't operationally learn. So instead, what I did is over the course of a few days, right, as I would, you know, drop Penelope off and like I observed a little bit, right? But people change their behavior, the Hawthorne effect when you're there, right? So I know that's not exactly what's happening. But if there was a child, for example, that was having a really rough morning and one of the teachers would get sort of frustrated with that child in the moment, if they saw me there, a couple times there was a comment like, yeah, it's a really tough morning. Like the teacher would tell me, hey, it's a really tough morning. That is enough of an opening in a conversation for you to start to operationally learn. So they said, it's a really tough morning. And I said, it looks like it. Tell me more about the morning. Is this the toughest time for you? And over the course of a few days, what I started to learn is that the morning time for drop off is the hardest part for this daycare. So they have corporate requirements of how they're supposed to serve breakfast. Those corporate requirements are family style breakfast, in which all the kids are supposed to be sitting down at the same time around a table. They also have a number of children that can be in the room at the same time with a teacher, but that number is quite large, right? They can have 8 kids of various ages, right? So picture somewhere between like 2 and 4.
That is the scariest thing I've ever heard. Being as someone without children, if I was put in that situation, I would just start crying.
And so picture one person with 8 kids of various ages and various temperaments and trying to wrangle them to sit at a table because that is the requirement that you've been put under, that they're supposed to all be sitting together. And there's no other option for the children to like go and play with something else, right? There's no center open. There's no other activity. And so you're just constantly trying to take 8 children and put them in an environment. And some of them are already done eating. And I have 2 children. And I can tell you at dinner time, it is hard enough to have 2 children sit at a table when they're done eating. Now I'm multiplying this in my head to 8 children and they're surrounded by toys and none of them are strapped in, right? Like our youngest, when we're our youngest, right, is in a high chair and strapped in into her high chair, right? So when there's just 2 kids, one of ours at our house, even though it's hard to get them to stay, is actually strapped into a high chair during dinner time.
And you guys are, for most nights, are you and Your husband.
Yeah.
You and James are together. So it's one-on-one.
It's one-on-one, just four of us sitting down. And I can tell you, even in that environment, it's hard for us all to eat at the same time. Right. So now I'm starting to understand the scale of what they're being asked to do and how frustrating it might be. And then just being there and being able to have a little bit of conversation where they're talking to me about what it's like to do that in the morning, I can absolutely picture getting as frustrated as these teachers were. And
so, question for you. This is all happening first thing during drop off? Is it right after drop off? How does that work time-wise?
Yeah, so time-wise, it's really complicated too, because people have an entire time that they can drop their children off, and everyone is trying to eat while now also picture parents dropping their kids off at the same time that you're trying to do family style breakfast all at the same time that all of the rest of the commotion is happening. And it's not as though where these children are eating are separate from where the drop off is happening. You're just walking into that space with jackets and kids and all sorts of disruptions. And so now you have added difficulty that these kids are, and these teachers are trying to figure out how to manage.
So this teacher has to navigate 8 kids being dropped off at different times.
Yep.
Getting them fed.
Yep.
And they're all 4 or under.
Yep.
And she has a mother sitting there being like, teach me about your job. So she's just really going through it on her end.
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, the times that I did talk to them is when they had another teacher in the room. But yeah, absolutely. So then you've got to, you know, get parents like me, right? And so what has been nice is that over a period of a few days, I got a really good sense as to why this would be so frustrating, right? And so now I can picture how to navigate this in a couple different ways. One, if I was the director, right, and I had that sort of operational learning, these are discrete problem statements, right? It is really hard to have 8 children with one person in a room be able to do family style breakfast without another activity. And it's always going to be a battle. They also have difficulties with the start times of people coming in terms of teachers covering and how many kids can be in a room and the fact that they have to shuffle kids from one room to another just to have the right number of teachers in the right room, right? So there's a staffing shortage, right? A staffing difficulty. There's also a difficulty of the fact that as far as they have taught me, they don't have a lot of training in terms of like coping of when they do have children who aren't listening, right? So if you've got 8 kids in a room and you've got 2 of them that are, you know, pushing each other and shoving each other, they don't have other training around how to cope with that or other hands to help with that situation, right? In some places.
Wait, hold on, because you're saying they don't have training how to cope. You're saying the teachers have not been trained
on another way of handling it besides telling them to stop, right? So they have to prevent the kids from hurting each other, right? So tell them to stop. There is no other process that they have or even another helping hand at this point to hand one of those children off to in order to have like quiet time or have conversation with them or all of the one-on-one time that you would need in order to actually help somebody grow from that experience and not just, you know, have the only bandwidth they have right now is to say, stop, right? Just stop.
So even if they wanted to take the time to sit down and
they
talk,
physically can't,
they have
right?
6 other kids.
Correct. That need stuff and are asking for stuff and somebody needs to go to the bathroom, right? So when you add that up, what felt like when I walked into that room, it felt like a teacher that didn't care, right? That was angry, that didn't have the ability to cope with any of the situation that they were in. And that I needed to remove my child as quickly as possible. That is the feeling that I had when I walked in.
And just to round it up here, when you walked in and you thought I should take Penelope away, that was at the end of the day?
That was the beginning of the day.
Still in the beginning. Yeah. Okay, so gotcha.
In the same time frame of this morning. So now I understand it a little bit more, right? Meaning I can empathize with the teachers. I understand that even, you know, even those that have been trained in how to deal with these situations would not have the bandwidth to be able to do it. And the entire setup of the morning is extremely difficult to deal with to begin with, right? So I can empathize. As a director, I could break that into discrete problem statements and chip away at some of them to make things better. But I'm not the director. I'm just a mom. Right.
What? Ah. That was the big reveal.
That was the big reveal. I'm not the director. I'm just a mom. So then the question is, well, what do you do when it's outside of your sphere of control? right? And so in doing all of this operational learning, what I have discovered is that there's a lot of system brittleness at this specific place, right? They have a hard time maintaining staff in the same room. They have a hard time having staff be able to cover when they have like a call out and somebody's sick, which then inevitably forces kids to be in larger rooms in this chaos of the morning gets worse. They have voiced some feedback in terms of like the family style breakfast isn't working very well. And that hasn't changed yet. And they have some folks that have come in that have no training in how to deal with conflict management with children and are just asked to like deal with the situation without any other skill set that has been built for them. That's a lot of system weaknesses, right? That's what you can learn in about, I don't know, it was probably 4 minutes of conversation over 2 or 3 days. So probably 12 minutes of conversation in general.
And yeah, so I just got a question.
Yeah.
The family style eating, is that normal? That sounds nuts.
That's a great question. So the other thing that I did is I talked to two other people that used to work in daycares. And apparently for a larger daycare environment, that is a common request that you do family from a corporate standpoint, you do this family style mealtime.
But it's a corporate request. It's not a parent driven request.
It is a corporate request. Okay. Yeah. It looks really good for pictures because all the kids are sitting together and eating.
I'm just stopping myself from going on some long rant about how pictures have become the priority in social life, but go ahead.
Yeah. So in about 12 minutes of conversation, you start to uncover all of this brittleness. Now I am not in a position to fix any of it. Right. And I can maybe bring up some of it to a director, but I am not a strong tie or a weak tie in terms of, you know, being able to help influence anything. I'm just one number of one parent of one child in this space. Right. So the chance of somebody being able to give enough time and thought process to like being able to hear the problems from me is probably quite small.
Which sounds cold, but it's not.
No,
it's just the nature the business that they're running. Yep. That's not to say they don't care about Penelope.
Yep. No, it's just they have a lot of constraints, right? And they have a lot of current system weaknesses, and I'm sure they're working really hard to try to address them.
And they have to do family style breakfast.
Family style breakfast. And so with that level of understanding of what the scope of the problems are, that makes it really easy for me to decide that I probably need to find a different place for Penelope to go to school. And it's not because it's a bad teacher that doesn't care. It's because there's a lot of things that make it very difficult for these teachers to be able to give the time and energy that I would hope Penelope would get in a day. And it's not a simple fix, right? It's not like there's one bad teacher that you can remove. And so if I picture the old style of what I, you know, historically would and viscerally wanted to do, right? I wanted to go to the director and say, that specific person that I saw yelling at yelling at the kids around my child, that's the problem. And I want that person removed, right? I could absolutely picture using all of that visceral feeling to go have that conversation. But that's not the problem. It wasn't a bad teacher. It is a very difficult setup with staff shortages and a lot of things that would take a considerable amount of time to change. And in knowing that, then I know that I'm not willing to wait to have that change with my daughter in the environment. And so I have to now make a different plan.
But I'm just going to devil's advocate this.
Yeah.
Nailed it. but isn't it on you to say something? Like, what's your accountability in the situation? You saw a problem and your solution is just to leave?
Yeah. So for sure, I will have a conversation with the director when I leave and explain exactly why I'm leaving. And they can do with that information what they want. But it will be a conversation that comes from a place of like, hey, this is just what I saw, what I experienced. This is my understanding of the problems that you're facing. It seems really difficult, and I really hope for the best of your ability to be able to manage this. And I understand that all of the folks that I've seen here very much care, and they're in very difficult situations. But it's just not a situation that I'm comfortable having my daughter in.
When you say you're going to leave, you mean you and Penelope, right? Like you're
not. Just, I'm going to leave her there.
Penelope's staying. I'm not willing to be in this daycare.
I'm uncomfortable with it. Yeah. So yeah, that we would be going somewhere else.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's where it ended, by the way. I had no idea. And I knew about this daycare situation before we started recording.
Yeah.
But I did not know that she was going to change daycares.
Yeah.
She just made a friend too, which makes me kind of sad. That's fine.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
So it took you 20 minutes to tell the story.
It did.
Which is about the length of an episode. So I think we're spot on. So I guess a quick recap, maybe, yeah, if you can just give us as to why on a human and organizational performance podcast, we just spent 20 minutes talking about parenting. There is a huge overlap, and you've talked about this a lot in trainings before, but how they connect, but just give us a quick recap.
Okay. So recap wise,
and make it good.
No guarantees. So recap wise, right? Being able to separate out person problems from system problems can be very helpful, right? And our initial feeling oftentimes is that we're dealing with a person problem. If we label it that way and try to go just after believing there's a person, which in this case was the teacher, and there's a problem with that teacher and that has to be fixed, well, certainly we could raise enough hay to have somebody removed from their job or have your child changed to a different classroom, right? That is possible. But if that's not really the problem, then we've just created a whole lot of upset for one individual when really we're dealing with a system problem. So being able to understand what the system problems are, although, you know, in your personal life, you can't pull somebody into a corner and you know, say, teach me everything about your job. There are absolutely opportunities to have small bits of conversation where people are willing to teach you what they're dealing with, the struggles that they're dealing with. And you can get a really good sense in a pretty short period of time of the scope and scale of system problems. And if in your personal life you are up against a bunch of system problems, you then have to be able to decipher, do I have direct control over addressing these and changing them and making it better? Or do I have to have control somewhere else, right? Are these system problems going to exist with me inside of them, or do I have to remove myself from that position? And so in this HOP space, although we can absolutely use it all the time at work to discover the system problems, and then we have some amount of control to change them, in my personal life, in discovering system problems, it helps me understand the magnitude of a change that would have to be made in order for a situation to get better. And if that magnitude feels too long in the circumstance it did, well, then I have to make some changes in order to make something better for my family environment.
Which hopefully after, you know, almost 30 episodes, it's been clear that the HOP principles, or whatever you want to call them, they're not just intentional on like combating audits or incident investigations, that their mindset shifts that apply everywhere.
Yeah.
All the time. It's just a change in the way you kind of see things. So good recap.
Thanks.
We'll end with a very quick story about what your daughter Penelope did yesterday, because we had a training at night. And so before she went to bed, she came over and said, "Uncle Matt, can I tell you a secret?" And I was like, okay. I have no idea where she's going to go. And she leaned in, and a four-year-old whispering is the most insane thing I've ever experienced. She was speaking directly into my brain with, like, there was no gap. It was nuts. I couldn't really understand her. But what she said was, "Hey, Uncle Matt, do you think that this weekend you can come over and hang out?" And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "And then maybe you can make me a treat." So she just wanted me to make cookies. That's all she wanted. And she thought that she would get it by just asking me to come hang out. So she's awesome.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Episode 28 done. I think we'll go back to what we were doing for episode 20 on 27. We had said we were going to talk about one more thing. We'll probably do that next episode, or we won't. Maybe it's more parenting stuff. I don't know.
We'll find out.
You'll find out. All right. Thanks for listening.
That's it.
Yep. Another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hop.com. hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
It's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.